In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up. That by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
Welcome to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. I'm so happy to have you with me here tonight. My guest is David Richards. David is a life strategist, number one international best-selling author, and speaker on personal development. I'm so excited to talk to him today because he's talking with us about his experience in the Marines and then getting into yoga and the transformation that occurred in his life. So David, welcome to The Spark. So happy to have you here.
Stephanie, thank you so much for having me on. I am thrilled to speak with you today.
Wonderful. Well, so take us through this journey. How long were you in the Marines? What happened? And what was this big transformation about?
Yeah, it's kind of a loaded question because I grew up in the military. So my dad was in the Marines. And so with the exception of 4 years, we lived on military bases my entire life. We moved every couple of years. We spent 3 years in Japan when I was a kid. So as a 10, 11, 12, and 13-year-old. And that had a huge impact on me coming back to the States then and being exposed to Eastern philosophy for that long at that formative time in my life. And so I always had a passion and love for writing in high school. I got some national recognition, but I had no idea what it meant to be a writer. And so not having a real vision for what I wanted to do with my life, I followed in my father's footsteps and joined the Marines in, 1991, ancient history for some people. But I served 15 years. I was in the artillery. I did some communications work, and I got a special role while I was doing staff planning. And I just got to a point where I was really kind of disenchanted, and I realized I was following too much in my father's footsteps and I wasn't carving my own path. And so I made a decision to get out after 15 years and explore a world that I never knew in terms of what it meant to be in the civilian world and be not reporting to someone, not having a chain of command and all this other stuff. And it was fascinating. It just so happened that really within 2 days of leaving active duty, I discovered yoga quite accidentally by reading a Sports Illustrated magazine of all things. And it was talking about how professional football players use yoga to strengthen their midsections, and being a manly Marine, I was like, okay, well, that's something I would be interested in. So I went to my first yoga class, and it was a gentle style yoga class, if people are familiar with it. So not a lot of exertion. And I thought, okay, well, maybe this will help with my stretching before I lift weights. And then 2 days later, I went to a different style teacher, different style class, like 30 or 40 minutes into class, and I'm drenched in sweat just from moving my body. And I was like, what is happening? And I remember we're trying to do a bind where you put your hands behind you in some contorted position, and I couldn't get my hands together because my body was so tight. And I'm watching the sweat pour onto my mat, and the instructor comes by in this loving voice, and she just says, use your hand towel. And so I grab my hand towel and I wipe my face. And she's like, no, use your hand towel to bind your hands. I'm like, oh, okay. And then we did Shavasana at the end of class, which is corpse pose where you just lie still. And it was honestly kind of this just a moment of presence and being aware. And it was like, what did I step into? And I got hooked at that point into yoga. A year later, I became an instructor while I was holding on, you know, doing my corporate thing. But I was just fascinated by the idea of being present and that there was more to it than just kind of this physical realm we find ourselves in.
Wow. I mean, what a powerful moment that must have been to come into a deeper awareness as you did nothing, because the Shavasana pose, yep, of course, is lying on your back with your hands up doing nothing. What a profound moment for you.
It really was. Well, and the big thing was, one of the other big shifts for me was in the military, my last assignment, I'd been working in Central America. And so as a consequence, I didn't spend a lot of time in front of the computer and I wasn't getting a lot of email. I might get 50 email in a week in my last assignment in the Marines. And I transitioned working to an IT company, you know, a Fortune 500 company, and I would get 50 email in 2 hours. And so I would leave work and literally I'd be listening to the radio, but I would just have all this noise going on in my head, and it would be to-do lists, and it would be things that I had to do for the next day, or things that I hadn't done today that I need to get done, or what I was going to do tonight. And there wasn't presence. It was drive home or drive to wherever I was driving, but all this stuff was going on. And stepping into a yoga room and stepping onto a mat, I got quiet. And that was magical. That was like, okay, I want more of that. Whatever that is, let me find more of that. I was just going to say that's almost 16 years later as a yoga instructor, it's been a beautiful journey, but it makes you appreciate there really is something to stillness and being present and just the interconnectedness of everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You are completely frozen, David.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I am. I see that now. You're not, though. Oh, that's so weird. I'm sorry.
No worries. I wonder, you might need to click back in and out, maybe?
Let me stop video and start up again and see if that does it.
Yep, you're there. And I'm just realizing how super dark the back of my room is. I know this will look strange because it will shift on the video, but it doesn't matter. The room is so dark and dim looking. We'll just switch it up a little bit. I forget about the time of day. That better looks a little.
It looks like I'm still frozen.
Let me see.
Yeah, I'm closing some more stuff on my
okay
screen and see if that helps. What else I can really close? Okay, let's try this. This might be a big one.
Zoom can be so funny.
All right, let me try this one more time. Oh, there we are. All right.
Okay.
All right.
And you're back. Okay. We'll just say we had to take a brief identification break.
Right. Station identification. Let's do it.
So after a really quick technical difficulty, you know how Zoom can be, I'm back here with David, and we're really talking about the essence of yoga and that it goes beyond just the poses. You know, I think people have really, you know, contemporary society might think, oh, yoga is you get on a mat, you do some poses and you go home. It's just exercise. And I'm really hearing from you, David, there's a whole deeper piece to it. Can you talk about that?
There really is, Stephanie. Yeah. And it's interesting because probably one of the first tenets of yoga I learned was you're not your mind and you're not your body. There's something else behind it. And one of the great examples I remember getting in my teaching was you can get to a place where you can sit back and sort of just watch your thoughts kind of pass before you. And there's no judgment. But then the question becomes, well, who is watching the thoughts? And it's this really deep cerebral thing. And it's interesting because what I've come to appreciate is most of us, and by most of us, I'd say a large portion of the population grew up with kind of this idea of Newtonian physics, right? Where there's separation between everything. And the idea of yoga is really that it's not that there's separation, it's the relationship between the observer and the observed. And that's kind of the principle and premise of yoga. Well, that's also kind of the principle and premise behind quantum physics and quantum mechanics, is this idea of connectedness and everything is connected. And that was a revelation to me because I grew up, especially in the military, which you think of, no pun intended, but it's heavy metal. It's not necessarily a high vibration society because of the nature of the business it's in, you know, you're in. And so to kind of step away from that and realize, wow, there is something more. And it's, you call it spirit, you call it essence, one with the universe, whatever you want to call it. But there's something to that. And yoga, the practice of yoga, especially consistently, takes you on your own journey of, okay, finding whatever that is inside you that exists and how you can share that with the world.
Beautiful. You and I resonate so much on this exact thing. You know, I feel like, and it's so interesting. It is your journey from a Marine where, you know, my brother was an Air Force pilot for 14 years. His wife was, I really understand a lot of that mentality. And yet my brother, I always was like, I know he's a spiritual person. I mean, I grew up with this kid. And so I knew that was a part of him. And it's interesting, you know, how, like you said, it's not necessarily something that you would put together with being in the Marines.
Right.
So I'm curious for you, was it that moment on the mat that opened your heart, or what was the catalyst for you?
You know, yeah, it really started when we lived in Japan. And it was just being exposed to Japanese culture. And, you know, and it's such a reverse of what you're used to, because we lived on the small island of Okinawa, south of mainland Japan, but you are a minority. It doesn't matter how many military bases there are, you are the minority. And that is a huge wake-up call for anybody. And then to see, you know, the hints of, and certainly as a 12 or 13 year old, I didn't really fully appreciate it, but to see the hints of Buddhism or Taoism, to see their temples, to see or hear their festivals. You know, they had an Obon festival, which they would do annually to honor their dead. And so you'd hear them banging these drums very slowly and methodically at night as they paraded through the streets to honor their ancestors. And I came back from that to a culture where 99%, even though they're military dependents like me, 99% of the kids that I went to school with in eighth grade had not been to Japan, had not had experience with that exposure, and didn't really care about that sort of aspect of their life, you know. And it was certainly, the military is still, I think, a bastion for Judeo-Christian values, kind of. But having that exposure, I started trying to meditate when I was like 13 or 14 years old. And like, kids would be going out for Fridays to the football games or going out to the beach and go drinking or whatever. And I would be sitting in my parents' living room with I had a Japanese sword because I got fascinated with swords growing up at some point. But I would be trying to, I'd read a book on Shambhala, and it was like, just empty the thoughts from your mind. And then suddenly, pop, a thought will appear. And I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to try to do this. And it was weird because I realized I was different in that sense. And that was something I couldn't separate myself from. And so I tried to channel it through my creativity. And then as I went into the Marines, I don't know that I was as focused as meditating, but if we had a chance, like when I was in Somalia for Operation Restore Hope and we weren't doing something, I would lie down and I would just try to sort of put myself into a meditative state. And that was kind of how I channeled it until I got back into writing, and then writing kind of became part of my meditation practice.
I feel you there. I feel like I have a new book coming out too, Becoming Fierce. And I know that in that I would just show up at the keyboard and I really felt like I was just channeling what I call the divine.
Yep.
You know, it was not something that I had to consciously think about. And so talk to us about your journey in writing and your number one best-selling book. Yeah.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, when I was in high school, I wrote a short story. It got published in North Carolina. It got honorable mention in National Scholastic Magazine. So again, I don't even know if that magazine's still around, but it was something that excited me. Like, I always had a really active imagination. I liked the idea of sharing messages through storytelling. And I had some poetry that got published. And so I went to college, and college was weird because in one sense I knew I was going to join the military because I was on scholarship for the military. I thought because of my influence and experience in Japan, I could be an international business major, but I did that for half a semester. I was like, this is boring. I'm not sure I get this. And I talked to like a career counselor, and they're like, well, what do you like to do? And I'm like, I like to write. And he's like, okay, well then be an English major. I'm like, oh, okay, I can do that. So I wrote for my major, but then when I got into the Marines, I was like, oh, well, I got to put this away. Like, this is a childhood dream. It's time to say goodbye to that and grow up now and become a Marine. And so I did. And I kind of held that part of myself separate from myself, really, for about 10 years. And then I had a boss who painted. And he had paintings that he had done in his office. And I was just blown away because you just didn't see that kind of expression in the military. And this guy was like a tough as nails. He'd been a Boston police officer before. He became a Marine and just this kind of grizzled guy, but he had these paintings in his office. And so I was like, oh my gosh, that kind of inspired me to start writing poetry again. And then when I got out of the Marines in 2006, I thought, well, this really, I'm not going to be moving anymore. So there's this idea of stability that I haven't had ever in my life. And maybe that stability is going to provide me a platform to really get serious about writing. And for me, what that meant at the time was I wanted to be like the next Stephen King. I always loved horror stories, like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, you know, classic stuff like that. But also Stephen King, just the characters he created were so deep and rich. And I was like, I want to do that. And so for probably 8 or 9 years, I would get an idea for a horror story. I would write like 100 pages. And then I'd hit this wall. And it was kind of hard. Like I didn't appreciate. I thought, you know, I was so kind of immature, Stephanie, from a writer standpoint, that I thought if I'm taking the time to write, it must be perfect. And so I would write and then it wouldn't be perfect. And I was like, oh, I would get stuck. And so I'd get like 100 pages into a story, lose interest. And I couldn't figure out how to take it further. I wasn't writing separately, independently of that. I was just focusing on the story and then doing work. And then I would go away from that story. And 2 years later or so, I would get another idea for another story. And this went on 3 or 4 times. And I got so frustrated. And finally, then fast forward to 2016, and someone had given me for Christmas of 2016, someone gave me a whiskey and yoga t-shirt. And because I was a yoga instructor and I liked scotch, I was like, okay, fine. And then that during the holidays, I started reading Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. And in the first or second chapter of that book, he asks the reader, what is your purpose in life? And I've never had a question kind of knock me on my butt the way that question did. I was like, what did you say? What did you write even 100 years ago when you wrote this book, or however long it's been? My life has a purpose. And I was so inspired. I grabbed a notebook. I grabbed a pen. I wrote my first life purpose statement. And then I was like, I'm going to teach people how to find their purpose in life. And I got so inspired. I started writing Whiskey and Yoga. I knew that was going to be the name of the book. I figured I would have to figure out how to connect those two things together. And I did. But I wrote about 200 pages this time. So it took about 4 months to write 200 pages. It was all autobiographical. And I got to April of 2017. And I looked at what I'd written. And I was like, this is going to be like 800 pages at this rate. And no one is going to care about an 800 page book about me finding my purpose in life. I need to start over. So I scrapped everything but about 6 pages. I came up with a 10 chapter outline on how to help people find their purpose in life. I got with a publishing company, you know, self-publishing company. We did an Amazon bestseller campaign. I rewrote the book kind of in 2 months. And it went to number one in 2 categories on Amazon in October of that year. And I was like, oh my God, it was such this euphoria, because part of it was, okay, I'm not writing horror, which that wasn't what I expected. Now I'm writing about myself and like revealing stuff that some of my personal friends don't, like close friends don't know about. That was terrifying. And then there was this wall of, can I finish a book? Can I finally finish a book? And that was like a battle every day. Like every day I would sit down and be like, am I going to like, let me just at least write this chapter. Let me get this chapter done. And so finally when it came out and went to number one, there was just a moment. I remember when my team called me and said, hey, it's number one in yoga and spirituality, I think. And I was like, I didn't have a number one book. Okay, cool. And then that was kind of it. It was like, and someone the next week was like, okay, what's your platform? What else you got? I'm like, oh, I have to have more. But getting to that point was so exciting. And I knew that within myself, I had found something that I wanted to mine and explore and polish and refine until I could produce things that would really inspire people.
I love the name of that book.
Thank you.
So perfect. It's to me too, it's like the perfect blend. And I haven't read the book. I have to admit, I can't wait to read the book. I love that it's this perfect blend of like this masculine part, like the whiskey and then the yoga, and then how it, what I love too, it's reminding me, David, of like the yin and yang symbol.
Yep.
And how, you know, that we all have these masculine and feminine energies within us, and that we can be both things. You know, we can have the whiskey part of us, and then we can have the more enlightened, the deeper yoga part of us. And it sounds like that also was just a big part of your journey.
It really was. And, you know, especially, I mean, especially growing up with someone who was in the Marines, like my dad was Clint Eastwood from like the Dirty Harry era. Like he was just, he'd been in Vietnam. He was a loving father, but you just didn't cross him. Like he was this, there was this absoluteness about him that you just didn't mess with. And I would push his buttons because I had this emotional side to me that I could not suppress like at all. Like it was, I mean, it was just, it was very much part of, like I wrote him a poem for Father's Day one time and he was like, what the, like, what are you, what is this? And it like, and I knew it like had rattled his brain because I was, and it was, and honestly, that was the, that was kind of the war that I waged within myself during my time in the military was be the Marine who was, you know, impenetrable and stoic and focused and everything else. And then have the side to me that was creative and kind and caring. And it was really hard to find balance in those two, but eventually that balance kind of forced itself to the surface. And then when I got out, I realized it was an opportunity for me to refine kind of and polish who I wanted to be as I moved into the next stage of my life. And for a while, honestly, Stephanie, I tried to, you know, I kind of almost, this pendulum swung in the opposite direction. Like I tried to suppress the fact that I was a veteran. Like, and part of it wasn't for anybody else. It was for me. Like I wanted to know what life was like away from the military because I've been around it my entire life. And I found it was partly hard to do that, but it was also a journey of, you know what, that is part of my story. And let me accept that. And by accepting it, I'm going to grow into something even more beautiful or powerful or whatever. And so, yeah, it's definitely been a balance that I had to find within myself, but that's part of the journey that makes it so beautiful.
Well, and it makes me curious as you're speaking of that, what things from the military, what lessons did you learn in the military that actually wove in beautifully or served you in this new life of purpose?
That's a great question. I would say there's two things really come to mind. The first one is we had a saying in the Marines that do something right, do something wrong, but do something. And in the context of being in combat, whether it's, you know, small units of people or armies battling with one another, there's each side is trying to influence the other side. And so the more you are passively sitting back and kind of responding to events, the more the enemy is shaping what's happening in the battlefield. And so you want to take action and try to control and dictate the terms of what's happening. And so that has been, when it comes to goal setting and when it comes to setting a dream or vision for myself, I can mull on it and I can sit and reflect on it, but at some point I have to take action. And then I assess, is that action moving me closer to my goal or further away from my goal, and make decisions and adjustments from there. The other piece that I really took away from the military was it's always great to have people that you can rely on, but you must find the fire within yourself to define and identify yourself and provide your signature to the world. Like no one can do that for you. No, you can bump into people who are going to serve you in some, you know, everybody's going to serve you in some capacity, whether that's reflecting your energy back at you or enabling it to take you to another level. But you have to kind of be self-starting to really get those things going. And that's even, you know, early on going through officer candidate school, which is a really intense 6-week program. It's super competitive. It's, you know, even you trying to help someone can turn against you. If like, if you can't, if someone can't carry their own weight, then it's a reflection. Well, what does that say about them as a leader? And do you want that person leading Marines? And if you trying to, like, I got yelled at for someone helping someone because this guy literally couldn't keep up on our hike. And I said, just grab the back of my backpack. And then someone's like, stop that. And I was like, okay. And that guy didn't make it through officer candidate school. But so you have to dig deep within yourself. And that's true for every human being on the planet. It doesn't matter if you've had military experience or not. You have to find something within yourself that is inspire you to grow and become a bigger and better version of yourself.
Beautiful. Yeah, love that. So, and my question is then, do those things, do the whiskey and the yoga, I guess, what is the interface for you?
Yeah, I struggled with it for a couple hours when I was sitting on it, but honestly, they both tell the journey of a spirit, right? And so for whiskey, it's the journey in a cask. And when whiskey and yoga went to number one in October of 2017, I had a bottle of 42-year-old scotch. And I said, if it goes to number one, I'm going to have a glass of this whiskey. And I remember at 8:30 at night, it did. I had a glass and tasting something that I had never tasted anything that old. And it's like tasting something in slow motion. And you realize this whiskey has been on a journey from 42 years ago to my mouth. And like, that's fantastic. And so obviously then yoga is the journey of a spirit or soul inside a body. And there is a relationship between the two. It's not like, it's not as concrete. It's not intended to be, but it's kind of esoteric. But that was the connection of, you know, for me. And that's why I don't drink anymore. But at the time, you know, I loved the different flavors and nuances of scotch. And in turn, that reminded me of the nuances of each of us as human beings.
Yeah, great. Well, we're going to have more with David Richards in just a minute. We're going to take a really quick break and we'll be right back. So in the meantime, I just want to thank you all for listening. Go ahead and jump on stephaniejames.world if you want to find out more about events, my new book coming out, and my film that is being released in June on Plex Network on the More You channel, When Sparks Ignite. So this and so much more when we come back. Thanks for joining us. Okay, I'm going to grab a little glass of water really quick. I'll be right back. Okay. Okay. And let me know, is there something particular you want to make sure that we cover that?
That was great. I don't know if you want to talk about my second book at all, The Lighthouse Keeper, about Master Your Mind. Completely up to you.
Yeah.
I want to hear about your TV show coming out on Plex. That's fantastic.
It's so exciting. Yeah. It's amazing.
Your movie. That's awesome.
Thank you. I'm super excited. Right. We can talk about it just a minute when we get done with the interview.
That sounds great.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So welcome back. This is Stephanie James, and I'm here with David Richards and being so inspired. I love this journey. We were talking about your first book, Whiskey and Yoga. Let's talk about your second book, David, as well.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie. So The Lighthouse Keeper was actually born out of Whiskey and Yoga. And I would go to my yoga classes and I would talk to them just about different ways to think about their experience of life. And some days I would say, you know, your life is a movie and you're the producer, the director. And what kind of film are you filming? Are you filming a tragedy? Are you filming a comedy? Is it an adventure? And then one day I went to class and I said, you know, your mind is an ocean and that's where all your memories are. Everybody you've ever met is in this ocean, and your awareness, where you direct your focus, is a lighthouse. And if you think about it, you can, you know, most of us create patterns in our life. And so the lighthouse goes in a way, certain way every day. But if you really start to get present and really start to focus and think about the life that you want to create, you can start to direct the lighthouse to where you want it to go. And so I wrote just 3 or 4 pages in Whiskey and Yoga with that idea in mind. And it resonated with me. And then it was probably maybe about 13 or 14 months after Whiskey and Yoga had come out that I saw a YouTube video of Dandapani, this Hindu monk. And he talked about basically the same premise. He said, you know, there's this blank space and that's your, all your memories and all your thoughts are there. And there's this orb of light and you can shine it over anything in your mind that you want to go. And that's where you direct your attention. And I heard this and I was like, oh my gosh, that's the Lighthouse Keeper. And that was my inspiration for the book. And so I started writing the book in 2019. And I was excited because it was a fiction book compared to Whiskey and Yoga, which was not fiction. And so it let me channel some of my creativity, and it was, how can I tell a story that's also educational and instructional to people? And so I came up with this character, Sam, and he was disenchanted with living on his father's chicken farm and decides he wants to go to the coast and go apprentice under this lighthouse keeper. And so he goes, and while he's there, he kind of gets on this journey to discover his mind and goes through sort of this Dickens-like past, present, future scenario, and has to figure out how to get out of his mind sort of and get back to his whole self. And it was great. It was great from a writing experience because I could feel I had grown as a writer. I had a much better editing experience on that book, and I sent it to my editor, and he had it for, I think, like 2 or 3 months. We met on July 4th, 2019. He's like, okay, here's the major thing that you need to fix. And it was like, it was my first real sort of, I'm like, how dare you? Do you know what I wrote? And then when I set my ego aside, I accepted and absorbed what he had said. And I was like, that's genius. Because now we even talked about, okay, how to make the story better in that moment. Came away with some ideas. I rewrote it, you know, probably over the next 2 months, and then pushed it out in March of 2020, right when the pandemic was kind of changing the world we lived in. But it was such a cool experience to write something. And so one of the ways that I wanted to ensure that I was prescribing or offering people up something they could take away from the book was, at the end of every chapter, Sam would have a journal that he would take away some key ideas about, you know, focus or willpower or concentration or really what it meant to be present. So I was really pleased with how it turned out.
So cool. I love that. I love that idea.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because then you're turning it into something that people are actually taking and they can incorporate and assimilate into their own experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. What was really intent behind it was, obviously with Whiskey and Yoga, it was, you know, each section was very purposeful and here's something you can do. And it was kind of fun because I was mixing scotch with yoga talk and it was very nice to do, but there was a beauty to the story within the lighthouse keeper that I wanted to capture. And I feel like I did that, and that's starting to line me up for my next book now. So what's
next? I love your titles are great, by the way.
Thank you.
I love
thank
both
you.
Of your titles.
So I have been working on this book for almost over 2.5 years, and it started, I got the idea for the book in October of 2019, right when the relationship I was in was ending. And I was going to call it Being, B-E-I-N-G. And it was partly born out of the idea that at the time there was so much fascination and fixation on social media. And you walk into a Starbucks or you walk into a Chipotle or someplace and everybody's head was down on their phone. And I remember because I did research for Whiskey and Yoga on it, at the time people were checking their phones like 85 times a day. And that's like 10 or 11 minutes, you know, every 10 or 11 minutes is ridiculous. And I was like, to what end? If everyone who has one of these devices is becoming addicted to it in some way, what does that mean for us? And I started to pull on the thread. And it was like, well, it's really about, if we focus so much on what we do without thinking about who we're becoming in the process, that can be a recipe for frustration in our lives because we have fixated on doing stuff without necessarily orchestrating our actions towards a bigger goal or outcome. On the flip side, if we say, well, who do I want to become in the future? What version of me do I see 6 months from now, 12 months from now, 18 months from now? Then we're going to start to align our actions towards that outcome. And that's kind of a much more efficient way to live our life. And so with the end of the relationship, with, you know, getting ready to do marketing and podcasts and everything else for the Lighthouse Keeper, I was going to put Being off for a few weeks or months. And then in January of 2020, I got an email about a crowdfunding contest, and I was like, what do I have to lose? I have nothing to lose. So I said, I'm not ready, but let's do it. And so I entered the crowdfunding contest, and I kind of just shared in my video for that what I shared with you. And then I went to a mastermind with Jack Canfield in March, pushed the idea of the book to him. He came back and was like, you have a year. And I was like, that was part of the advice he gave me. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, you don't know me? And yeah, I was completely baffled. And then a couple weeks later, I got back. You know, the world was shutting down, the pandemic. I had the very spiritual kind of experience that happened to me. And then I saw that weekend, I saw a picture of a woman on Instagram. And it was like, I know I'd seen that picture before somehow. And so that started this story. And it took me 2 years to come up with the title for the book, but it's called The Love Letters to the Virgin Mary, The Resurrection of King David. And it's got quantum physics in it. It's got superheroes in it. It's a pretty intense story. So.
When can we look forward to hearing it? Do you have an end date in mind?
I do. So I have committed to my, I just wrote the first draft in, I finished it New Year's Day this year. And I just committed to my editor to get it to her by the end of the month. But I'm planning on December 8th is the launch date. Yeah.
So exciting. So, and you also do speaking. You have a speaking career.
I do.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've really gotten invested in over the past few years is this idea of absolute certainty and how you can use absolute certainty to accomplish anything. And what I talk about is there's a formula for accomplishing anything in our lives, really. And you think about it, it starts with motive. And so you think about, what is my motive for doing something? And there's, I won't go too far into it, but there's kind of four classes of human experience. And we have to figure out ultimately what we, the reason we're doing something may or may not feel good. Like whiskey and yoga, writing it didn't feel good for me because I was uncomfortable, out of my comfort zone and everything else. But it was good for me and it was good for other people. It served a greater good. And so we want to look at our motive is how much of a greater good does it serve? And then from that, we tap into potential. And obviously the greater good that we can serve, the more likely we are to tap into more of our potential. When we tap into our potential, then we take action. And based on the action we take, we assess our results. And we say, did I get closer to my goal or did I get further away from my goal? And from there, we kind of realize, okay, I want to change something. I got to try something else. I didn't get to my goal, so I need to try something else. And that comes back to certainty, this idea of certainty. Because if we don't get closer to our goal or we tried something and it doesn't work, what happens? A lot of times people are like, well, I can't do it. It's either too hard. I'm not the right person. I'm not strong enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not big enough. I'm not small enough, whatever. And so they talk themselves out of it and they say, well, I didn't want that anyway. And the reality is if you want something bad enough, you will find a way, because if you don't, you'll find an excuse. And really what that comes down to is the more certain you can become about the outcome you're trying to achieve, the greater your likelihood of accomplishing it. And so you have to look at that cycle that I just kind of explained. And the key to it is the certainty piece, because if you can say, okay, this is the outcome I am committed to, no matter what, I will become whoever I need to be to make this happen, then you won't let an obstacle get in your way. You won't say, well, that didn't work, I'm done. Instead, you'd be like, that didn't work. Okay, what else do I need to try? How I need to change my approach to get to a different outcome? And so that's really what my speaking is about, is how to help people tap into this idea of absolute certainty. I'm actually in the process of building an online course for that as well.
Well, what I find fascinating about that too, as a psychotherapist, is the concept of how we all want to have control, and yet control actually being really, it's a mindset, but it's not a reality. We really don't have control.
Yep.
And at the same time, you know, how our brain loves predictability, and that's why we love our routines and habits. And I love this, because if we want a sense of mastery or control, or like you're saying, this absolute certainty, it's something that's actually an inside job instead of an outside job.
I love it. That is precisely it. And that is, if we could bottle that, Stephanie, we could make a mint, because people don't understand that it's not about what's outside you. It's about your perception. It's not about managing your circumstances. It's about managing your state. And when you can manage your state, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are going to be, because we can't always control what happens to us, but we have absolute control about how we respond to the events around us. And that's where people get stuck on. They're like, well, I don't want this. And like, I've got a very dear friend of mine who, ever since the election, he is still like this bitter and angry man. And it's just like, how is your life? I don't forget about politics which side you favor, how is your life fundamentally different in the past 18 months than it was before that? Like you are absolutely the pilot of your ship. You just aren't willing to acknowledge that. And that's the thing that I find so incredible, is that so many people are relying on something outside themselves when the answers are all within us.
And I think too, David, when we do that, what we're doing is, when those circumstances happen, like the friend that you're speaking of, it's like we hand that thing our power on a yes. silver platter.
100%, 100%. And that's, why would you do that? Would you, and granted, it's not easy. It was a journey for me to get to the point where I am, to get to that place. But once you get to that place, you realize, why would I ever give my power to anything that isn't going to serve me? Like, why would I spend a moment? That's why I tell people, like, I don't spend a lot of time watching the news. Like, I don't need to know that this side feels this way, or this news channel is going to say, this is what's going on, this is what's wrong in the world, or this is what's wrong with, like, I don't need that negativity. Like, I look outside, the world looks beautiful to me. Like, that's where my life is. It's not in what someone else's opinion of a situation is.
And again, I'm resonating so much with you. And what I feel like you hinted at when you were speaking of your experience during the pandemic, to me as well, I had to kind of hide almost this sense of joy that would arise once in a while, even though, I mean, I was seeing all my clients, you know, on telehealth, and I had to do it all here from home.
Yep.
I was living alone at the time. And I really was clear about, this is the universe's calling for us to literally come inside.
Yes, that 100%, 100%. And I can't tell you, I know personally for me, like leading up to 2019, besides working on the book, I did like 14 Spartan races, like the obstacle course races. I was traveling for the first half of the year, I was traveling every week up to Boston for work. And so you add all this up, and it was like, just go, 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 go constantly. Like, I got to do this. It was kind of, you know, the impetus for what became Love Letters to the Virgin Mary, when I called it Bing. And I can't tell you how many times during the pandemic, when no one was going out because everything was closed, I would just go out in my backyard and be like, this is such a beautiful planet. Like, this place is fantastic. And I had, where I lived at the time, I had like a small copse of trees, and it really kind of gave depth to the neighborhood. And at night, sometimes you could hear owls in the trees, and it wasn't just, they weren't just hooting. They would make like these obscure, wild noises. And I realized that if it hadn't been for the pandemic, I never would have paid attention to that kind of thing. Like, I just never would have tuned into that. And now, like even last night with the blood moon, like seeing that happen and realize, like, that's something that only happens once every so often. Or, you know, 2 years ago in December of 2020, it was the great conjunction between Saturn and Jupiter, like in the sky on the winter solstice. And you're like, I want to explore that stuff. That's a part of each one of us, and we just have to acknowledge that. So it's the pandemic was, I resonate with what you said in terms of, you know, I'm sorry that people suffered during the pandemic, and I know it was really hard for all of us. But at the same time, if you looked for beauty, it was right there. It was so easy to find. I remember running with friends while we were still kind of in this training mindset out in a nearby park, and we came across just a deer just lying down, just relaxing about 20 yards away from us. And we all stopped, and the deer looked at us, and we looked at the deer. And then after maybe like 30 seconds, the deer was like, I'm getting uncomfortable, I'm gonna leave, and just like got up and left. But it was like, that never would have happened before. Like, that never would have happened if we hadn't slowed down. So I resonate with what you said completely.
Yeah, and I'm with you. Never would I wish that on our planet. And it's the thing of, when difficulties or circumstances arrive in our life, we actually do have the choice. What are we gonna do with it? We can either turn into the news and join the fear mongering, or we can say, you know what? One of the most powerful things I have is the power of choice. And I can choose what I'm going to focus on.
Absolutely. I love it. Oh, that's fantastic stuff.
Yeah. So I'm curious too, for you, as you've moved forward now in your life and moved through the pandemic and now things are opened back up, what is it that really ignites you? What is exciting you? What is really igniting those sparks within for you?
Certainly I love connecting with people. I love engaging with people and understanding where they are in their life, what they see for their life, and how they want to grow. And if I can move them forward an inch, a millimeter, a foot, a mile, that is so rewarding and gratifying for me. Obviously, this book has kind of taken on a life of its own. I never expected that 2.5 years later, I would still be working on a book, but I realized it's part of my calling and who I am. So the growth that I've experienced in writing this book has been far beyond what I imagined. And so I'm really excited to share that with the world. And it's really just experiencing, expressing, and sharing the joy of living with people. Like, I mean, that's really what, when you really connect with someone and, you know, Stephanie, the one thing I've come to appreciate is I am a firm believer that women absolutely have a sixth sense. And when you approach women from a place of authenticity, they will connect and respond with you. And if you have even the slightest ulterior motive, a woman can figure that out. And it doesn't have to be a bad one. It could be like, I'm trying to sell you something. But I love women have always been my greatest teachers. And I feel personally that we are on the threshold with the way knowledge has evolved and our ability to consume and produce knowledge has evolved with the digital and information age. My belief is if we really want to understand what heaven on earth could be like, it would be to let women kind of take lead. And I think that would be really powerful.
I love that. And I'm going to have you pause really quick and come back on. Awesome. We got you back live in action. So thank you for that. You know, I have a Becoming Fierce Women's event.
I saw that.
Coming up the end of June. And that is exactly the premise, you know, getting in touch with that fiery strength, passion, and purpose within us. And it's going to be this awesome, intimate retreat for 26 women. So it's very intimate. Wow. With these amazing powerhouse thought leaders, really to help other women find their voice, find their truth, find what lights them up inside, and then share that gift with the world as they develop it themselves.
I love that. And I feel so fortunate in that some of the women leaders that I've worked for, I've never appreciated the elegance of leadership until I've been led by women. And the way they can design things, the way they design their teams, the way they lead their teams is fantastic. And so it just, in a lot of ways, it makes sense. And I'm not a male basher, but men have done good and bad for the planet for a long time. Wouldn't it be a seismic shift in our approach? It was, okay, women, you do it. Like, let's shift and just see what kind of planet could we have, because we know what men have produced over time. And like I said, there's been some good, there's been some not so good. There's parts of not so good now, if you look at what's going on in Russia and things like that. But why wouldn't we let women, like, it's not even letting, it's like, let's take the next step in evolution and shift gears and advance to, like, having that intelligence lead us for a little bit instead of the male ape-like simian factors. So, I'm excited. That sounds like a fantastic event.
Thank you. I mean, I really appreciate hearing those comments coming from someone who's really been around male leadership. So really meaningful comments. David, how can people find you? How can they find your books?
Yeah, so thank you. So davidrichardsauthor.com is my website. Go check it out. We're getting ready to start the new campaign for the next book coming out. And we're going to revisit the website's design here shortly. I'm on social media at David Richards Author as well. So Instagram, Twitter. I'm on Facebook too. I just don't spend a lot of time there. So.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, David, for being here. If there were some ending words, the essence of what you want to leave with the audience, what message would you like to leave?
The biggest lesson I've learned in my life is that life happens for you, not to you. And when you can embrace that idea holistically, you understand that there is a much broader, larger design to life. Then you start to tune into this idea that we are one with the universe and the universe is one with us. And that is such a recurring gift. Whenever I get into a situation where I'm like, okay, why is this happening? I don't look at it as, why is it happening to me, which is kind of this victim mindset, but rather I look at it as, why is it happening for me? And that takes it in a completely different direction, because now it's like, what can I learn from this? How do I grow from this? how do I, and I told my daughter this a couple weeks back, like, you know, life, if you look at it the right way, life is just a game. And you just have to keep leveling up. You just have to keep leveling up and figure out, okay, how do I solve this version? How do I get to the next version of myself? And the biggest way for me to synthesize that for myself and for people is this idea that life happens for us, not to us.
Love that. Love that. Again, in resonance with you, life happens for us. Thank you so much, David, for being here on The Spark. Join us. Make sure that you subscribe so that you join us every week for amazing content like this. We have the best in psychology, spirituality, science, entrepreneurship, and more. And love just sharing these messages with you. So lots of love. Join us next week on The Spark, igniting your best life.